Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig Hartman in beautiful Charlottesville, Virginia, at the studios of the Charlottesville Radio Group with our producer, Mike Biseglia. That's a soft C, Biseglia. And folks, you know us. We're the podcast where you learn all about the ins and outs of being a chef, being a food personality. You know, we all love the Food Network. We all love the Cooking Network. We think, you know, chefs are cool. We think the life's very romantic and off show. But, you know, what we try to find out here on Chew the Fat is really, what is it? This isn't an interview where we're going to find out what their favorite condiment is you know, the kind of on-surface thing. We're going to go deep into the mind of the chef. And find out really who is this person. So, and tonight we got a lot of digging to do because we have the chef from the local restaurant here in Belmont in Charlottesville, Virginia. The local restaurant was Charlottesville's, Virginia's favorite restaurant for the use of local food. Kind of neat being that their name is the local, but. We have Chef Matthew Hart with us tonight. Matthew, how you doing?
Doing good.
So what do you think? You're here. We're just going to chew the fat. We're going to chill a little. How was your service tonight?
Slow.
Oh, come on, man.
Not a good week. Not a good week right now.
Well, you know, it is the week after Thanksgiving. Historically, not the best week for the restaurant business. People are full. You know what I think happens right after Thanksgiving? People feel fat. What do you think?
I feel fat, no doubt. we knew it was going to be slow, but it's still still always hope to be a little busier. But, you know, all in all, we're pretty lucky. We stayed pretty busy.
Yeah. So, you know, the locals are pretty cool happening place, and so is Belmont. How did you end up catching that gig of being the chef at a place like that?
Well, Adam Frazier, the owner, we go back a ways, and he's actually Dave Simpson's nephew. Simpson, the owner of the CNO. And I met him while I was working there, and he kind of came there from Maryland. He was planning on moving back to Maryland and opening a restaurant. He's a Marriott guy. He'd worked at Marriott for years, and came down, and Dave kind of pawned him off on me to kind of show him about some small restaurants in the kitchen and stuff. And we got to be friends from there. And, you know, it was years, you know, 7, 8 years later, we talked about doing a place together and that didn't work out. And then he called me up when he bought the building over in Belmont. And, you know, at that time it was just a shell, you know, just a broken down building that really didn't have much going on in it for years. And, brought me on board, and we got going on the local. And, you know, so...
So it was kind of something you cultivated for quite some time, huh?
Doing something together,
I mean,
yes.
even without knowing it, you cultivated.
Yeah, we were working, you know,
the
first time around, and one of the reasons that it fizzled out and didn't happen is, you know, we just didn't know what the hell we wanted to do. We were batting around ideas. We were talking about doing some scary Southeast Asian fusion thing that invariably would have fallen on his face. And some, you know, he had some other ideas that maybe might have worked a little better, but just nothing really quite gelled. And then when the local came around, we were in Belmont, and the name The Local, it's, you know, it's kind of, people take it to mean just local food, and that's kind of been the focus. But originally, that wasn't really the whole thing. That was only part of it. The really, at least half and half focus was Belmont's such a cool neighborhood.
Yeah.
And we got so many people that live in the neighborhood. And, you know, we just wanted to do kind of like a local neighborhood restaurant. And it kind of grew from there. I mean, I've always used local foods, you know, well before the local. So it only made sense to kind of ramp that up and focus on it even more.
So who came up with the name? Was it the two of you together? Or did...
No, it was... there's some argument about that.
Well, you can set it straight right now.
No,
on the air.
It definitely wasn't me. There's no doubt about it. It wasn't me. But Adam heard it in a movie.
Yeah.
Some movie in Australia or something. Apparently, you know, in Australia and England, in Scotland, apparently people call their local pub the local.
Right.
And so he just kind of thought that was cool. Other people have said, "Nah, we mentioned that to you."
So
we've got at least three other people who say they came up with the idea. But I believe Adam. I believe you saw it in the movie. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So, you know, there's a lot of folks out there. You know, a lot of guys who go to chef school. They go, you know, they're working and they don't always catch a break. You know, they're working years as a sous chef or, you know, cooks. You know, they might get a chance to be a chef at some, you know, how many restaurants do you think open and close in America in a year? The number's got to be so staggering. And a restaurant opens and doesn't make it. But, you know, you are kind of in a position where I know you guys worked hard to open a restaurant because I've opened restaurants and it's hell. It's really one of the toughest things. But here you are. You guys open now 3 years?
It's going to be four in March, three and a half.
Four, yeah. So it's going to be 4 years. You know, things got to start be feeling good over there. You know, you're out from under things. So you're living kind of the dream. How do you feel about that? I mean, how do you feel about being the chef at the local?
You know, it's great. I mean, it's the first restaurant that I've ever been involved with, you know, opening from just a shell of a building. And the food, you know, the food's my idea. It's what I've wanted to do for a long time. You know, not only the use of local foods, but, you know, everything, the whole concept, the price range, the style of food, the just, you know, I mean, the whole thing for me is just putting something good on a plate that looks good. You know, it's fairly, you know, simple food. People kind of hear me say that and think I'm being derogatory or something, but it, you know, it's not like that at all. You know, there's plenty of room for creativity and fun and doing new stuff and forward food and flavor combinations that people know. And, you know, I mean, it feels great. You know, I've had this idea in my head for a long time. We've talked about doing, you know, Adam and I, you know, it's one of the things we talked about doing back when we were throwing around other ideas that, like I mentioned, weren't so good.
Yeah, sure.
And, yeah, I mean, it's great to see
But your idea is working, which is, it's got to feel good, I think, you know. Like I said, so many people go into business and it doesn't work out. And, you know, you hit stride. You guys are working, you know, working right now towards really rolling on a stride. People love going there. So let me ask you now, let's back up just a little. What kind of journey did you have on the way to finding the local? What was your first job in a kitchen?
It's back to the CNO. I mean, the CNO was not where I learned everything. You know, I mean, I've worked for a lot of other good chefs too, but, you know, that Dave Simpson and Thomas Bowles are really the ones that kind of took me under their wing and, you know, showed me. I mean, I just got a job there out of high school when I was 17 years old.
Right.
Yeah. I had to. You know, I'd have no other goal.
So it was a kitchen job. You went there and just took a kitchen
dishes.
Job.
Yeah, just, you know, no other goal other than pay the rent, you know, keep the lights on, you know, just trying to, you know, first place out of my, you know, away from my parents' house that I was living in and just trying to, you know, have a job. And then, you know, I first became enamored just with what they were doing, you know, just the speed of it and stuff and the kind of, you know, almost like an athletic thing.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
right.
You get the tickets in and bang it out, and I just thought, man, if I could be a line cook, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and then you know, love of food, and you know, of creating dishes, and you know, that sort of thing. That came a little bit later. You know, the first appeal was just kind of like almost like the adrenaline of it. You know, on the line.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the hotline.
Well, you know, CNO kind of an institution for Charlottesville, and you know, Thomas Bowles, what a great guy, Dave. Those guys. Elaine, you know, this is really one of the cool, well, I always thought it was one of the cool restaurants of Charlottesville because, you know, I travel a lot and I find that the coolest things about a lot of places I go, the best restaurants fit like with the area, the culture, you know, the weather, the terroir, everything just like fits. And sometimes Charlottesville seemed a little disjointed, you know. You know, you'll have a lot of different restaurants, but nobody says, hey, what is Charlottesville cuisine? You know what I mean? But now it's starting to come along, you know, with places like yourself and Maya. But it was really, I think, CNO always kind of, was right in there.
And that was the place, you know. If you wanted to take your girl out for a nice place at, you know, at prom, you went to Charlottesville and went to the CNO, and the menu was in French, and it was just, you know, it was really cool. And, you know, I still kind of had that in the back of my mind when I started washing dishes there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's a great place to learn. You know, you mentioned Dave and Thomas and Elaine, and, you know, I mean, if you want to learn about wine, there's nobody better than Elaine around here,
yeah,
as
right.
far as I'm concerned. And, you know, Thomas and Dave, they have big hearts. You know, they're willing to take a chance on somebody.
So when did they start putting you, you know, prepping or on the line?
Well, I started prepping.
Probably,
I mean,
right away, right?
I wanted it. And, you know, I came in on my days off, and I remember coming in on my day off and Thomas, you know, saying, yeah, just work, you know, just show me some stuff. And, man, I spent the whole day snapping sugar snaps, and I was bummed when I left. I thought, man, that isn't what I expected. But,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that
yeah.
kind of, you know, it showed him that I wanted it and wanted to do some stuff. And then the lunch chef position, you know, they don't serve lunch anymore and haven't for
right.
a number of years. But that opened up, and they basically jumped me from snapping sugar snaps to that. And, you know, it was a big deal at the time, you know.
Yeah,
I was
right.
like, oh, I'm chef, you know, it's so happy. But obviously I had a lot to learn, and they had to hold my hand a lot and fix a lot of mistakes. But, it was a nice step.
Well,
you know?
They must have believed in you a little bit. You know, they must have thought, well, this guy, he can handle it.
Oh, I think I clicked with them originally. I don't know, you know. I'm sure my first few weeks there, I gave them pause. But they stuck with me. And, you know, it was a nice situation, the way they had with the lunch chef situation, as far as training somebody to be a line cook and then move into more sous chef sort of responsibility.
So your career in the kitchens, has it been really here in Charlottesville?
Oh, completely.
Yeah. So I guess it kind of makes sense, you know, being at the local.
Right.
You know, here it all fits, you know.
Yeah.
So you're here in Charlottesville. We're seeing a great place for a foundation. You know, I know that Thomas, you know, back when I had Clifton, you know, we used to share ingredients back and forth and stuff, and he really knew his stuff. And so what'd you do after that? So you were working as the lunch guy. How many years were you there for, like?
Man, all in all, I was there for, you know, 8-9 years.
Right.
I left for a while. Was going to do some different things, and then you know, got drawn back to it, and that was with Angelo. He's really Angelo over at IVN.
Right.
You know, he was another person, probably the other person other than Thomas, that really, you know, had an effect on my career.
Right.
As far as teaching me to be a chef, you know, Thomas really worked hard with me and really put me in a position to kind of be creative and, you know, write menus and do that sort of thing. And Angelo kind of showed me how to, you know, just write a prep list, write a produce list, you know, just get organized. And, I mean, he's the man with that sort of thing. I mean,
yeah, sure.
Not to discount his other skills, cause he's also the man with a lot of, you know, a lot of other stuff, and, you know, writing menus and, you know, creative cooking as well. But that's kind of what I really took away from there, was he just really kind of taught me how to start to run a kitchen a little bit, you know, mostly at Wild Greens, really.
Yeah.
You know, I worked a little bit at the IVM, but not much, mostly over at Wild Greens as the chef there.
Sure.
With him and his dad, and, you know. Great people, I'm sure you know them.
Yeah,
well as
yeah,
well. And,
yeah. I've eaten Easter dinners there, and at Ivy, and I, you know, I actually never ate at Wild Greens because, you know, I'd moved away, and came back right at the end of Wild Greens, and I'm sorry I didn't, because I think Charlottesville needs some more places you can go and just get like a really radical salad. And
man, I think it was a great idea.
Like that,
I'm
know.
Sorry I didn't, you know, I wish it would have worked out better. I
yeah.
mean, I really think that, you know, I think Angela was onto something. I think his vision was right, and just some things didn't go right. I mean, there's got to be options, you know, because really they should have been competing with Chili's and, you know, TGI, whatever, you know, and they should have been killing him. Everything was done right. You know, it wasn't like what I'm doing now. It wasn't like what he does at IVN, but it was good, real food, right. You know, made right.
That's what we're talking about. Not every idea goes well. Same thing with cooking, right? Aren't there a few menu items that you've thought of? These things are going to be unbelievable, and people just just reject it.
More than you can count. Either people reject them, or I've had other ideas that I thought were going to be great, and took 6 minutes to plate up, and that doesn't work either. Sometimes you get caught up in the artistic part of it and lose sight of the kind of craft and the graft and just the fact that, I don't know.
I think it's pretty legendary that the local has a huge kitchen, right?
Now we do. We do now, man. Our kitchen's all right now.
Yeah. But you used to do some pretty good numbers out of a really small kitchen, probably the size of this studio right
now. Just about. There's a part of me that misses it. Maybe I'm just a sicko, but I liked having the smallest, hottest, kitchen in town and banging out big numbers and making people happy. But I don't know. I like having a big, nicely outfitted kitchen a lot more. So,
True. Sometimes you get spoiled, but I've always been in awe of, places in New York City with these little kitchens banging out big numbers. Cause I like a good sized kitchen and, with everything in it that anyone ever wanted. We all dream of that. Have you ever been in the Inn at Little Washington kitchen?
I haven't. Melissa has, and she's told me about it. And of course, his first cookbook was something that was eye-opening to me, just his use of Virginia ingredients that sort of thing. And so, when they did the first big renovation and stuff, I remember, hearing tales.
Yeah, so let me ask you a couple of questions. So you grew up in Waynesboro. Any inkling that food was going to come into your future when you were a kid? Did you have anything that was?
Looking back, at the time, I didn't think that. I thought I was going to play shortstop for the Yankees or be a professional skateboarder or something.
Don't say the word Yankees in here with Bisaglia. That's a Mets fan right there.
You got
a Mets
guy. I should have been paying more attention.
No, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Your team's better.
No wonder you didn't. You didn't end up being a.
But looking back, my dad's always been a good cook, straightforward cook, but, in our first house, he built a little, I guess it was like his version of a man cave, but it was just like a little kitchen in the basement where he'd do his little things. And, he always does, the beef tenderloin or the standing rib roast at New Year's and Christmas.
I love the standing rib roast.
Oh, me too.
Especially the fat on the outside.
Not so much for the tenderloin, but man, I love the rib roast. Yeah. I try to tell him about that, but he's like, the tenderloin's always a crowd pleaser. So what are you going to do? He was always into that. Even when I was little, he was always, getting us to try new things. He'd, buy some canned snails from France or something and, he put them on some French bread with an ungodly amount of garlic and butter. Mm. And try them. And, it tastes like garlic and butter. It was good. I don't know if I could taste the snails at all, but, I like that garlic and butter.
I like a good snail.
Absolutely.
That's been a while. I stopped using them because every restaurant back in the day, they all had the same appetizers. Okay, you got the snails, you got a stuffed mushroom. It's like, come on, man. We got to get our act together, which is so cool about, being here in Charlottesville. We got some great restaurants. People aren't stuck in, any kind of rut. They're really thinking, outside the box or even actually just not even outside. They're just thinking, they're looking at the food. What are some of your favorite farmers we got here in the area that you like to use?
Oh man. Well,
it's not a trick question.
Appalachian Star. I'm really digging them now cause they're coming up with, this lettuce mix. It's just fantastic. And, actually it's been one of the things that, we've had a hard time sourcing, consistently is just to have, we want our salads to be locally grown lettuce.
Yeah,
fresh,
right.
Not this, that bag of mescaline mix that everybody uses, which isn't terrible, but it's not the same.
Sure.
And, you know, they've been coming through with that. I mean, Planet Earth Diversified, you got to love them. I mean, everything they give you is just so pretty, you know? You know, I feel a little silly sometimes always going with that kind of ubiquitous kind of, I don't know, what did Anthony Bourdain call it? Like the microgreen mohawk on everything. Man, they're pretty. They should make everything look good. You know, we've got a local baker that I love a lot, Goodwin Creek Farms. We're actually doing most of our bread in-house now. But
what's the name of their baker?
Goodwin Creek.
I never heard of
him. This guy, John, he's great, man. He's fantastic. He does, you know, great ciabatta, but he was doing all our bread and all our baguettes, but we started doing that in-house. But he's still doing our burger buns. I don't know, man. I try to... 100 different burger buns. I can't make one as good as him. So just keep buying them from him. So I mean, yeah, those are the guys that jump out at me. But, I mean, we work with a lot of different guys. Buffalo Creek Beef. We finally found some short ribs that we like that were local. We're having a hard time with that.
Well, you know, whenever you're buying from local meat company, they got to figure out. You know, I think it's a hard thing about being a farmer because they have these whole animals. And then everybody just wants, like, certain parts. And everybody wants the same part, you know. And I've always thought about how hard that is. So if you can be a place that just buys a whole animal and uses it up and has some kind of continuity for a menu, it makes it really hard for a chef, especially in a restaurant, small restaurant. You can't be buying a side of beef and hanging it in your restaurant, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we try to work with people, you know, like, for instance, another farmer that I'm super hyped on is Zach over at Timber Creek Organics. His chickens are fantastic, but you know what made me think of him was his pork. And you know, we're working with him.
Yeah,
you know, he sells us the chops, but you know, we buy a shoulder and some belly each time. You know, each time we buy some chops, just so you know, he doesn't end up with a freezer full of pork shoulders. Because you know, of course, everybody wants the chops. Everybody wants the tenderloin.
True.
You know, you gotta. People are going to have to look at that. You know, they're going to have to start.
Sure. Have you served any pig's ears yet?
I have.
How'd that go?
It wasn't a big seller. I really liked them though. We had one up in New York when Melissa did the last dinner up at the Beard House.
Right.
Melissa's my wife. Chef out at Palladio.
Yeah, we'll talk about Melissa in a second.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
We went out to dinner at the Spotted Pig, and I had a pig's ear salad, and it's awesome. You know, I really liked it. And so we came back, and I had Richard over at Double H saving all his pig ears for me, and spent countless hours confying them and then frying them. And nobody really wanted to buy them, but I liked them a lot.
Well,
I
just had someone who went to McGrady's in Charleston, and they were like, "Chef, man, have you started doing the pig's ear thing yet?" And because that pig's ear appetizer at McGrady's was off the charts, you know. And no, I haven't yet, but I got to see. I don't think a pig's ear thing will go good at barbecue, but I think you could probably get away with it if people were digging it.
Yeah, I had one over at I'm blanking on the place over in the old Eastern Standard place.
It's Harrison's place.
Yeah, Brookville.
Yeah, Brookville.
Brookville. I had a pig ear there that was delicious. He did it with a little sriracha mayo or something. I don't know exactly what he called it, but you know, it sounded like he had like some sriracha and some.
Fried pig's head this week. You know,
did he?
Yeah, I saw that on there. So
we used to do a pig's head bolognese.
Yeah, see, so
once again, didn't sell, but I sure like doing it. You know, some people love it. You know, you got to have those things on the menu because. You know, there's a few people who are going to come in and go through the roof. You know, you're like, I can't, you know, that's what I want. And, you know, you get those few people, and it's, you know, they're not expensive cuts. I mean, shit, the pig ears, Richard was given to me. I mean, other than that, he was feeding them to his dog. So, you know, what's he carrying? Give them to me. And, you know, we'd coffee him for
time. You know, being an old school chef and working for years, you know, we were always kind of pigeonholed into having, you know, two or three cuts of beef, you know, chicken breast, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's so cool now to have, you know, restaurants are evolving to the point where the guest is willing to try fried pig's ears and then say,
absolutely,
man, That's awesome. You know, I didn't get the shrimp cocktail. I got the fried pig's ears. You know what I mean? But people are savvy. You know, they're looking at food blogs. They're watching the Food Network. They're reading, you know, online magazines. They're buying magazines, and they're digging it. So, you know, it gives us a chance to be able to do things and have people kind of go, you know, go crazy about them. What do you got right now that you're doing at the local that you think's kind of cool?
Oh man, got a pork belly dish that I'm loving, and you know, people are into that now.
Yeah,
so that's
yeah.
something that not only am I hyped about, but you know, we're actually selling in quantity, not just the few people who
right,
come in. Who
which
are
farm are you
it.
Getting that from? The pork
that's
belly?
From Timber Creek.
Nice.
And you know, we're using the immersion circulators and sous vide in those. And man, they're fantastic. We're doing kind of a fun kind of play on breakfast, kind of a bacon and egg sort of deal with grits. So we're doing some grits and then a 62-degree sous vide egg, then the crisp pork belly on top. And it's you know, that's the sort of thing that gets me excited. You know, things like the different cuts of pork. I mean, I guess all chefs love pork, but I have a special fondness. You know, I mean, I don't care so much about like a pork tenderloin or you know, pork chop, whatever. I like pork chop just fine, but you know, that's not what gets me excited. You know, pork belly, barbecue. You know, good barbecue. Yeah. That's kind of, you know, America. You know, that's like, you know, good.
I've only cooked 250,000 pounds of pork in the last 2 years.
You know a little bit about that. Huh?
I love pigs. They're the
my next
best.
Tattoo.
They're the best. Yeah.
Tattoo, big butcher's thing, you know, the diagram.
Yeah,
the separated
yeah.
portions out.
Everybody should have one.
Yeah, you don't know, tell Melissa.
No, look, at the barbecue exchange, I've started to, like, you know, give free food to people that have, like, cool pig tattoos or if they dress for the place. So if they come with the cool T-shirt, be like, oh, here, you know, have dessert or whatever. Because, you know, it's just... it's the same thing like we're talking about. People are passionate about food in a way that, you know, back in the day, I didn't see, you know what I mean? And back in the day, also, people were, like, pretentious about food. So they're like, well, you know, I'm going to have a Bordeaux tonight. It's a first-growth Bordeaux and, you know, whatever. But now, you know, people are like, you know, old-world wines, new-world wines. You know, we have some... different cuts of meat. You know, people are into trying kidney, you know. I mean, this is, but now, you know, what's happening is all those things, all those prices are gone up, supply and demand.
I know. I ordered lamb shank today, which we used to get for next to nothing. You know, it's like the ossobuco, too.
Mm-hmm.
We used to get those for next to nothing. And man, now they're pricey.
Yeah, but you see, tenderloins went down like a house of fire.
I love that. I love that, man. I mean, it's got to come down. Though. I mean, if what I want and what a lot of people want to happen, where things get more local, more, you know, more in your neighborhood, that's got to happen, because otherwise it's going to be exactly what you were talking about earlier. You know, the farmers are selling the tenderloins for some outrageous price and then have, you know, a whole bunch of shanks and, you know, everything else that they can't sell. You know, they're selling those few prime cuts, you know, the steak cuts and that sort of thing, and you know, it can't be like that.
So you got a son, right?
Mm-hmm.
How old is he now?
Yeah, just turned 9.
And you got a wife who happens to be a very accomplished chef. Do you guys ever like talk about food at home, or do you have like this thing where we're talking about Melissa Close Heart, Matt's wife, who's the chef at Palladio, been at James Beard many times, and James Beard nominee, and past sous chef for me. That could probably her favorite thing ever. No, just kidding.
Well, she had to take me out to introduce me to him before things got serious. I remember sitting out in the Keswick dining room, shaking like a leaf, gonna meet Papa, as she said, scared to death.
Yeah, well, you know, it's all show. Come out with the knife.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is, you know, it's kind of, is it intimidating at all? Or, I mean, she's so cool, you know, so
yeah,
that's
she's
nice.
Cool, but... and we do different things, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, she's setting the world on fire, trying to win James Beard Awards and stuff. And, you know, I mean, I was trying to put some good food out. And it's a weird, different, our things are so different. You know, it's good that, you know, we both love food and we both love, you know, the creative aspect and that sort of thing. So it's kind of a perfect thing where we can talk about it and, you know, we always, you know, kind of batten ideas off each other with our menu, you know, ideas and stuff. You know, it's amazing sometimes what you know, kind of the can't see the forest through the trees kind of thing, where sometimes, you know, having another perspective just to bounce it off of, I think helps both of us a lot. But, you know, we're pretty lucky. It's not much, you know, no competition or anything.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do well in that. She does pretty well out there. You know?
I got to tell you, I had a meal, probably the last menu. I don't know if it's the newer one yet, but it hasn't been that long ago. And it was fantastic. It might have been the best one I had for a long time. And I've always liked the food there. I always loved the food. But this was really, it was off the charts.
Are you talking about me or Melissa now?
Melissa.
I thought so.
Melissa. But I'm coming to you. I've had some really great meals with you, too. But I'm just saying that her food has been evolving. And there's more heart in it. But at the same time, it's refined, too. You know, and that's the thing about the food at the local. There's a lot of heart in that food. And so I think it's that's the whole thing about food now. I mean, I can say people can come to a barbecue exchange. Man, there's a lot of heart in that food and a lot of work in that food. And it's fast food. Or and they can go to the local. It's, you know, a trattoria bistro type place and say, man, there's a lot of heart in that food. But then they can go to Palladio. You know, so isn't that the thing that kind of binds us together?
Absolutely.
Know?
I mean, people love to throw out the question, whose restaurant's better?
Yeah.
You know, ask that, you know. I mean, you know, Melissa's got all the accolades and that sort of thing. But I don't know, you know,
but
got
you're better,
people
say it.
Coming
say
to
I'm
on
better.
Saturday. So, no, that's a, you know, the nice thing about it is.
You know what? All of us would love to, you know, everybody. You know, who's a chef that, you know, Harrison, we talked to Harrison, and Harrison, you know, he's got his own restaurant, you know, and that's a dream of chefs. They'd love to have their own restaurant. So, you know, sometimes we don't see the forest for the trees because we're look, you know, I have my own restaurant. This is a blessing, you know, and you're, you know, you got a restaurant that's, you know, your owner thought that, hey, I like Matt enough. I want him to come up with his food idea. You know what I mean? That doesn't happen every day. And so, you know, this is something that, you know, people who will listen, other young chefs that will listen, they have the same dream and you're living their dream. Did you ever think of that? That you're actually living someone else's dream?
You know, I feel fortunate. I never thought of that, no. But I definitely feel fortunate.
But it's true. It really is
that,
true.
Things have, you know, things have broken the way they have for me. You know, it could have easily been. You know, you like to think things would work out either way or that you'd be in a similar situation either way, but you never know. You know, a different turn here, a different turn there, you know. I don't meet Adam, you know. Yeah. I'm not in this situation for sure. Maybe in a comparable situation, maybe not.
You know?
So it's it's interesting.
Yeah, it seems like it was meant to be. Also, where do you draw, like, inspiration? I mean, you get to bat things back and forth with Melissa. Are there other areas you go to, blogs? Are there books that you read, or is it just, are you 24/7 thinking food in your head?
Definitely not 24/7, but a lot. You know, it's always kind of, I don't know, on the back burner, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's so many, I mean, you know, anytime I go out to eat, you know, even if it's not at a restaurant that's not that great, you know, it's hard to shut it off sometimes. You know, it's like, you know, what could have made that plate great? What could have done this? And, you know, and then when it comes time to do menu things, I mean, you plug in, you know, you want to do lamb. You just do some random search for lamb, and you get a million things to get you going. You know, you're not going to come up with a dish that you're going to say, boom, that's it. That's going on the menu. But you're going to get just something, you know, like, you know, something that's going to kind of get you thinking about it, you know, and get just, you know, and then once you get started, you know, there's, you know, I love cookbooks, you know, I love reading cookbooks and just, you know, you're not going to try to mimic anybody, but at the same time, just get an idea, something to kind of, you know, get the creative juices flowing.
Yeah, you know what, I understand what you're saying. I don't, when you say you're not going to mimic someone, sometimes there are some people out there would be kind of cool to mimic in a way, you know, because they're unbelievable.
Absolutely.
But the inspiration, I was, you know, I'm trying to get an interview with Tarver King, you know, up at Ashby Inn. And, you know, when I was doing, the Morrison Clark Inn and then, Keswick, he was at the Woodlands in Charleston, South Carolina. And I would try to find places that were comparable, but getting lots of press and seeing what they're doing. And I would look at his menus were really well written. They made sense and everything. And I could draw inspiration, not that I would say, oh, look at this, I'm going to take that dish,
yeah,
you know, and pilfer it. But you can see where someone's coming from.
Absolutely.
You know, like, you know, being the local, you know, you got that steak frites, that makes a lot of sense. And actually, I'm hungry for that right now. So.
But can't get more classic than that.
But, you know, you look at things. So you say you go on, you do a search for lamb. And you come up with different things.
I mean, even a chef sometimes it's somebody you really, you know, respect.
Mm-hmm.
Other times it's just some, I don't know, housewife in Missouri who, I don't know, likes to put black olives with lamb. And then you think, what if I did, you know, some of those oil-cured olives? And then this actually happened today. I'm doing a braised lamb shank, and I knew, you know, the organic butcher called me out and was like, you know, got a lot of lamb shanks. Are you interested in working with them? And I didn't really know what I wanted to do with them. Nothing jumped out at me. You know, there was no, you know, lightning bolt from God that said, this is what you need to do. And, you know, then you just get that one little thing. This lady, I don't even know what she did, but she did something with black olives. And I was like, oh, if you did that. And, you know, then by the end of it, it was kind of I think it's going to be good. You know, we're going to do it tomorrow. We'll see how it goes. But it's, you know, it's, I don't know, it's got an orange and red onion gremolata, kind of play on a gremolata salad kind of thing, and going to braise it. And it's just little things like that. You know, it doesn't have to be a great chef. But, you know, a lot of times it is. But, you know, I mean, the cookbooks that I have in, you know, at the restaurant and stuff are all chefs I respect. And
sure. Well, I'll tell you, you know, working with Southern cuisine over the years, you know, I would go to like the Southern Heritage cookbooks and things like that that had a lot of like housewife things or grandmother things. But, you know, you see a dish that's indigenous of like Virginia and you're like, whoa, I can take that and do this and this to it and have it as the inspiration.
Oh,
so
you can elevate those flavor combinations that are, you know, classic. And I mean, I think that's what, for a lot of times, you know, that's what can make a great dish for me is when you just have totally familiar flavor combinations in a reinvented way where people, you know, they know what they're tasting. They had it that their grandmother made, but it's in a more sophisticated, better presented way.
Yeah, sure.
And, I mean, that's the sort of thing I love.
So tell me, where do you fit as a chef? Do you feel like, hey, I'm a chef? Do you feel that? Do you feel good about it? Proud?
Yeah, I mean, I've been, you know, running a kitchen long enough that absolutely, you know, I like that designation.
Yeah. So what is your style of like management?
That's a tough one.
Are you like the crazy mean guy that hits people and kicks them and throws them on the floor?
I don't hit and kick, but I yell more than I'd like to. Man, I try hard not to.
Do you feel bad? Like when you yell at the end of the night?
Oh, absolutely. Like, at the end of the night, I'm always like, buying somebody being like, yeah, sorry, you know, I lost my temper. I know you're just doing your best, but God, it's hard sometimes, you know, it's hard, you know. You got four parts of a five top up, and the guy says, oh, chef, I overcooked the steak. It's going to be 12 minutes. And you're like, son of a bitch. Fire everything else again. I don't know, you know, it's hard. It's really hard not to lose your temper, but I try, you know, it's something I work at. I do better than I used to.
Did you ever think about like having a camera in the kitchen, like, and people could watch you lose your crap right at their table.
We talked about it, like if they wanted a real reality show.
Like, right there, like, people could watch. You'd be like, you know.
Something. I mean, our kitchen is a little bit of a pressure cooker sometimes.
Yeah.
Adam, the owner, he's as bad as I am. We're both bad. We just, you know, it's hard. You know, this, you know, all our eggs are in this basket. You know, we want this to work so bad, and we want every table to go out perfect so bad.
Right.
That, we've talked a lot about how, you know, how funny it would be just to watch both of us lose our shit. You know?
Yeah, so. I think that's the best part of some of those shows, you know, when you see it. I just watched this new show, Chef Hunter. All right, it's a bad show, but basically what it is, people go to have an interview to be the chef at a restaurant, and they'll have two people, and this lady brings them in, and then they do their night, like their stage night, you know, where they, their tryout. And, you know, I watched one, and this guy was just tanking on his tryout, and I'm sitting there like, I need a drink. I gotta have a drink here. This is this is stressing me out. What's he doing? You know, what's he doing? No, you know, and you're just like, you're freaking out. And so, you know, I think, it's cool for people to see what happens. I think that's what people are interested in, is it's crazy in a kitchen. And it's all timing. And one little thing, like someone dropping something or, you know, whatever, it throws a night off.
It throws everything off. You know, it's not just that one table. It's everything, you know.
It's the domino.
The rhythm. I mean, when you get in a flow and a rhythm, and then all of a sudden it's like crying.
So what is your, what's your future?
Oh, man. You know, I think Melissa and I would like to do something eventually. It's a tricky thing, though, because we're both really happy where we are.
Yeah.
You know, we really like the gigs we have. And, you know, I think for the foreseeable future, at least short, you know, I think that's where we both want to be. But the next step, you know, when we leave where we're at now, I think it would be to do something together. What exactly that is, you know, we both have some different ideas.
Right.
Some different ones that we both like. And, you know, that would be the next step when that time comes anyways. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It turns out you have to have money to open a restaurant.
Yeah, and, yeah. Really gosh darn it.
That, you know. So maybe when we get some of that, we'll do that.
It'll come.
That
it'll come.
10 or 15 years.
So anything else you'd like people to know about you?
Wow, that's a tough, you know, you said you weren't going to throw
trick
any
question.
Trick questions.
Well, you know, look,
so, man,
here's
a tough one.
Here's the thing. It's not a, no pressure, but, you know, this particular podcast will be out there for eternity, so people can always, you know, click on it. Matthew Hart, what do I want
to
know?
You're trying to lower the pressure? Or
yeah, I'm trying to lower the pressure. No, lower it. This is it. It's gone out for eternity. You know, what do you want people to know? You know, it's for instance, you know, I asked Harrison that question, and Harrison's like, I just want people to know, I want them to love what they get and to tell me if they don't, you know, and I thought that was pretty cool. But, you know, here you are. It says, you know, what do you want them to know about you?
You know, I'm going to go with Harrison's answer. Can I do that? You said that was cool, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's a cool answer.
That's good. You know, I want to know. I don't like really hearing it, but I want to know when somebody doesn't enjoy themselves. You know, I just like people to come out to my restaurant and have a good time, you know. I always like to come out and say hi to people and, you know, hear what they like and don't like. And, you know, there's nothing better than hearing good news. And conversely, there's nothing worse than hearing bad news. It's kind of not really equal, though, because the good news feels pretty good.
Yeah.
And the bad news is like a knife in the heart. But, you know, it's still the most important thing.
Yeah,
to hear,
it really is. We, you know, it's one of those things. But anyway, look, Matthew, I've enjoyed talking to you. And, you know, I enjoy your food and you as a person. I hope people will listen to this and come out and, you know, take a look at your plate a little differently, knowing who you are and what you're all about. And the local, everybody, the local in Belmont. You go there and you can get some fried pig's ear salad.
No.
We're going to go with the pork belly with the sous vide egg and the grits. I'm feeling that right now. So anyway, thanks, Matt, for being here tonight. I appreciate it. And
thanks,
folks,
Craig.
You've been listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig. Remember to sound out. Let us know what you think. Let us know who you'd like to hear from, what kind of questions you'd like me to ask. So thankful that you listen in. And don't forget to come see me at the Barbecue Exchange in Gordonsville, Virginia. You guys are the best. Over and out.
The song is called Alice's Restaurant. It's about Alice and the restaurant. But Alice's Restaurant was never the name of a restaurant. That was always just the name of this song. And I guessed it. Well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want. drum. I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that it came out as a record.